content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times, Parade Magazine, and the News and Observer. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Before the onslaught of the coronavirus pandemic, you may recall that we periodically featured on Armchair Traveler a New York Times travel series, 36 hours in some locale, either in the USA or abroad. Rome, Italy, Madison, Wisconsin, and Albuquerque, New Mexico were among the places we visited before the pandemic took hold. Recently, the Times travel editors decided they wanted a new version, which they call 36 hours in wherever you are. Now, this time, they asked readers to share their thoughts on how they would spend 36 hours during a weekend at home during the pandemic. And the writer-editor for this particular article is Tracy Richter. It appeared in the April 2, 2020 issue of the New York Times. She says, our first reader-generated itinerary, a weekend of traveling you can do from home. And she begins, for many of us, over the past month, and she refers to March 2020, our grand plans have shrunk down to small ones, as have the physical spaces we occupy. While we can't travel for pleasure right now, the spirit of travel, our curiosity, empathy, and sense of adventure can't be confined. With all of this in mind, and to continue our 36 hours column, we called out to our readers for ideas of what people could do over a weekend, wherever they are in the world, even if they're homebound, that embrace the ethos of travel. We received and read more than 1,400 submissions from all over the world, from Guangzhou to Zurich, Sydney to Buenos Aires, and across the United States. And this is our first Reader Source 36 Hours column. We hope it moves you. The responses have been edited for clarity, style, and length. And we're going to begin on a Friday at 5 p.m., happy hour. Make a plan to meet your neighbors at a distance, each of you bringing your respective libation, and yell across the fence, from your fire escape, across the street, or out your window, about how much you'd rather be enjoying that same drink at some chic bar. Kai Romero of San Francisco offers that toast. Then we have, make a Cazuela cocktail, one of Guadalajara's signature drinks, because it is a great way to get some vitamin C and a little bit of tequila. Pour grapefruit into a bowl, a grapefruit soda, rather, into a bowl. Add in some slices of fresh grapefruit, orange, and lime. Throw in a shot of Reposado tequila and a pinch of sea salt. The outcome will be the most refreshing drink you'll ever try, according to Lorena Kunz Salim of Guadalajara, Mexico. Now it's 7 p.m. and we're heading into flavor country on a Friday night. Cook your way through a cuisine and share the experience. I am Turkish, my roommate is Armenian, and we're both from Istanbul. We are sharing recipes from an old cookbook with our friends all over the world and having dinner with them via Zoom. The recipes are by the Armenian-American chef George Mardikin, who started his famous San Francisco restaurant Omar Khayyam's during another crisis, the Great Depression. It's so interesting to see how dishes we both grew up eating are perceived and translated across the cultures. That from Hand Onyar of Brooklyn, New York. And then we have make zuppa pavese, a hearty comfort food typical of Lombardy, the area in Italy most affected by COVID-19. In individual heated bowls, place a slice of toasted sourdough and crack one egg. Dust with tons of grated Parmigiano-Reggiano. Season with salt and black pepper. Ladle boiling chicken or bone broth to cover. The heat of the broth soft cooks the egg and soaks the bread. Serve the soup immediately, breaking everything with a spoon and mixing into a fantastic mess. A soothing moment of closeness at a time when closeness is not an option. So says Eleonora Baldwin of Rome, Italy. Now we move to Saturday. It's 9 a.m. and we're going to stretch and explore. Let the sunlight wake you up naturally. My bed faces a window. Ever since this pandemic exploded, I stopped drawing the curtains. I sit on my bed, Look at the vast city of Manila outside my window and pray for my people. Find solace in morning meditation. Let your mind travel through the many small things you can still be grateful for. A litany of gratitude and a remembrance of the good things that have passed can help the mind and soul. And that is written by Beverly Dalton of Manila, Philippines. Then we have, take a walk before your first coffee or tea. Walking, especially early in the morning, provides a fresh view of the day. It's hard to be pessimistic when the day is just beginning, writes Neil Kramer of Bali, Indonesia. And Neil, I have to say, I agree with you. Amen, if I may. Me too. Because that's what I do a lot. I enjoy taking a walk before the first cup of coffee. All right, let's move on to try doing push-ups every day. If you've never done them before, start with modifications. You can do them on your knees. If you have weak wrist, try using your forearms and knuckles. Proper form, straight back, don't arch. Keep your butt down. Keep your head aligned with your spine. Your body should be straight. Your shoulders should be positioned over your hands. Lower yourself until your chest reaches the ground. See how many you can do, and challenge yourself to do one more each day, writes Yasmin Asif of Wilton, Connecticut. Now it's 11 a.m. Saturday, and we're going to the local wilds. Become an eco-traveler in your own yard. Often we think of nature as somewhere else, but it's really all around us, no matter where we are. What birds are in the trees and bushes or are perched on top of the light pole? If you don't have a field guide, download the Audubon Identification app and spend some time discovering your avian neighbors. There are apps for identifying butterflies and native bees, too. And this is from Elaine Stakera Simon of Las Cruces, New Mexico. At 1 p.m., let's go green. Wander to the nearest bit of earth, whether that's your backyard, the tree in front of your house, or just a bit of soil in a pot. Plant some seeds, put water and nutrients into the dirt, and wait. Be patient. Something will grow, and you will be surprised by your ability to enrich the world around you with life. You may not be traveling far, but you are actively changing your environment. While we may not witness spring this year, things will bloom nonetheless, according to Amanda Reynolds of Brooklyn, New York. Then you can create a green indoor oasis. Collect all your houseplants and arrange them in the room where you spend the most time. Snip clippings off any that can spare an offshoot and place them in water-filled empty jars. Expand your collection by rooting food scraps such as avocado pits, pineapple tops, and the bottoms of lettuce and green onions, writes Stacy Kissel of Somerville, Massachusetts. At 4 p.m. on Saturday, we have real-life erotic escapes. Start a journal. Use any medium. Just do it. Write down your thoughts, what you're thinking in a day, who you're virtually talking to, what you're eating, how you're coping. Think about what's going on in the world. How does this make you feel? Journals and diaries are crucial to historians trying to understand the past. Become part of history by writing down your experience, according to Lauren Gray of Lawrence, Kansas. Then, lean into fantasy. 2 days ago, I started writing erotica from quarantine. I offered to send my friends a chapter each week over email. In the world I'm creating, there's an apocalypse where climaxing is the only antidote to illness. If you've never tried writing fiction about desire, I challenge you to it, according to Anika Berry of Brooklyn, New York. At 7 p.m., it's dinner and a show. Transport yourself to an evening in Italy through the three Franks. First, lemon pasta inspired by Frank Brisano, cooked while playing the master Frank Sinatra's That's Amore. Enjoyed with a glass of wine from Francis Ford Coppola's Vineyard. And lastly, a showing of his classic, The Godfather. Salute, te arwa sanjani, abinav das. Of New York, New York, offering that one. And then we have Watch the Film Before Sunrise by Richard Linklater. The movie is about the spontaneity of travel, the thrill of connecting with someone from another part of the world, and the deep conversations that are only had while on the road. It's such a timeless rewatch, too, according to Stephen Philly of Chicago, Illinois. And you can take in the universe. The International Space Station flew over Portland, Oregon on a clear night, and we had 6 minutes of watching it stream across the sky. You can go to NASA's Spot the Space Station website to see if there's an observation coming your way. According to Sue Strader of Portland, Oregon, I've done this one several times. It's a lot of fun. And then we go on to Sunday at 8 a.m. changing routines. Treat yourself to a lovely salad for breakfast. One of my favorite travel memories is a gorgeous caprese salad eaten in the sunny dining room of our hotel in Évora, Portugal. Pair with good coffee and rustic bread. In my experience, people in Europe wisely see no reason to limit salad to lunch and dinner. And this is according to Jane Beachel of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Then we have make small discoveries. To stretch my legs during the lockdown, I've been walking around the block every day and I've started to notice details that I'd never seen before, like the fake painted window on the building across the road or the old candle holders that were once used as part of the street lighting. When the quarantine ends, I hope we don't forget to appreciate what's been on a doorstep all along. Camilla Capasso of Modena, Italy, making that offering. And then on Sunday morning, it's 10:30, and we have to use our hands. Draw your house. Great moments in famous buildings have been painted thousands of times, but how many times have the nooks and crannies of your apartment been sketched? Let's turn our homes, however small, into art-worthy inspiration. Josefina Jolly of Buenos Aires, Argentina, offers that one. Or we can undertake the easiest and most fulfilling origami project of your life by folding 12 pieces of paper and building a lovely star. Modular origami has been my absolute favorite occupational therapy since I was a restless child, the process enthralling and soothing. And this is according to Leila Dibb of Berlin, Germany. Draw something that's in front of you. When you make art about the world, you make the world yours. Doesn't that sound nice? According to Sarah Nesbitt of New York, New York. Now on to noontime, where we can be isolated together. Check on your neighbors on your block or floor with an email, text, or phone call, or leave a card with your name and contact information. Are they okay? Do they need something from the store? Help with an errand, food? Can you bring them a hot dish or home-baked bread? This simple act, done carefully and from a safe distance, palpably reduces your sense of fear and isolation. I've seen the faces of some neighbors for the first time. Now they wave, according to Jim Carrier, Burlington, Vermont. Play a tune on the piano and send the recording to an older friend. I sent Nana Augusta, my adopted Italian grandma from the hard-hit town of Bergamo, a video of me playing Ave Maria on the piano. Google Translate helped me let Nana know in Italian that this was for her entertainment. Her reaction, translated from Italian, "Thanks, Mia. What a thrill. You made me cry. Thank you very much. A beautiful gift you gave me. Now I listen to it several times." Mia Gonzalez of San Diego, California, inspiring us with that one. Next, walk to a friend's house and call them from your phone from the street. They look out their window, and you can see each other in person using your phone to hear each other's voices. You are far apart enough to be safe, and it's better than FaceTime. Elizabeth Yeager, Brooklyn, New York, offering that one. Then we have send a postcard. Recently, I signed up with a service called postcrossing.org or postcrossing.org. They match people around the world with other postcard-loving people. I will write to someone in Taiwan, and someone from the Netherlands will write to me. Through the postcards, I get to share my wonderful city and learn about other people and where they live. And that's according to Sue Cussel-George of Eugene, Oregon. At 3 p.m. on Sunday, we're going to travel through the pages. Read your way around the world. Helena Attlee's delicious Land Where Lemons Grow is a brilliant example of food meets history meets travel book, paired with a shot of Limonello. Salute e forza Italia. That's according to Sergio Luis Laños of the Santa Cruz de Tenerife, Spain. Explore the United States with William Least, Heat Moon's Blue Highways. Published nearly 40 years ago, it retains the power to transport the reader to the VFW halls and churches and the sun-dappled two-lane roads of the America left behind by interstate travel and mass commerce. And the people you'll meet along the way are sufficiently varied, open, and engaging to take some of the sting out of social distancing. That according to Kristen Halls of Seattle, Washington. And our final write-up, start a virtual book club. My good friend created a group that chat entitled Quran Read. In a week, we plan to discuss the first chunk of the Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver over FaceTime. Now is a good time to travel to new places within ourselves, but a road trip through one's imagination isn't as exciting if you can't pack other people in the car. So writes Cameron Edson of Charlottesville, Virginia. Wow. Well, how about some outdoor adventure, so to speak? It comes from a featured article in the July 19th, 2020 issue of Parade Magazine. And Drive-In's Then and Now, The Comeback of American Treasure is the title. As writer Nicole Payer explains, stars on the big screen, stars in the night sky, how a nostalgic staple of Americana, or America, is experiencing their most welcome comeback. Are you ready for this one? I believe the drive-in theater is as much of a great American pastime as baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie, says Denny Pine, 51, a drive-in superfan who has been to more than 120 of them across North America, with many more to go. It's the combination of the outdoor screens and Art Deco marquees that has him hooked. He is a member of the Drive-In Movie Theater Fan Club, keeps a running list of the locations he's visited, and has a growing collection of memorabilia that includes everything from old drive-in speakers to article clippings about grand openings. And he's not alone. Whether it's the memory of seeing your first film from the back seat as a kid, the setting of an unforgettable first date, or weaving your way through cars to get to the snack bar during intermission, drive-ins hold a special place in many Americans' hearts. They've been the background for music videos, including Jimmy Buffett's Take Another Road, and featured in iconic scenes in dozens of movies like Grease, and more recently, Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, for Grease star Olivia Newton-John, 71, filming the movie's memorable drive-in scene was one of her favorite moments. It reminded me of being a young girl when I used to love going to the drive-in. There was such a great energy of all the families in cars with kids in their pajamas, including me, she says. There is not one thing that I don't love about a drive-in, says Paul Rubin, 67, whose 1985 comedy Pee-wee's Big Adventure featured a drive-in. The first movie I ever saw, Dumbo, was at a drive-in. There's an underlying quality of Americanism to the drive-in theater concept, says Philip Hallman, film studies librarian at the University of Michigan. It's this combination of our love of automobiles and movies, and it's this experience, which is both public and private, that lets us see a film in a community setting, but also control the environment in our cars. In recent months, thanks to COVID-19, drive-ins have seen even more activity, repurposed as the site of weddings, high school graduations, dances, concerts, and more. Many have been reopening with infection control in mind. Autorama Twin Drive-In Theater in North Ridgeville, Ohio, cut down on the number of cars that could enter and added 10 portable toilets to supplement existing stalls. But as its marquee facing the highway reads, Autorama has been social distancing since 1965. Retro Revival. That social distancing aspect has certainly helped put drive-ins back on the pop culture radar. The 2020 rendition of Valley Girl, a new musical adaptation of the 1983 movie, was released in May digitally and to drive-ins. In early July, the Tribeca Film Festival launched Tribeca Drive-In at stadiums in New York, California, Florida, and Texas. More than 30 iconic films from Goldfinger and Back to the Future to Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure will be shown. Opening nights were free for essential workers. Music acts have been getting in on the action, too. In April, country star Blake Shelton, 44, who shot the video for his country rockin' remake of Kenny Loggins' Footloose at a drive-in in 2011, made this forecast. When this virus is through, I could see drive-in theaters having an even bigger resurgence. Being in your truck or car forces the six-foot rule, and you can watch a movie with your family and be entertained. It's a new way to do concerts, too. Country superstar Keith Urban did just that recently, staging a free live private concert at the Stardust Drive-In in Watertown, Tennessee, just outside of Nashville, for about 200 frontline healthcare workers packed into some 125 vehicles from Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Cameras broadcast the show with lights and sound streamed into the vehicles from FM transmitters usually used for movies, as well as from full concert PA system onto the big screen. The audience applauded by flashing their headlights and honking their horns. Country superstar Garth Brooks reached out to his fans during the pandemic, too, with a one-night-only concert simulcast to some 300 different drive-ins across America. As the pandemic wears on, more singers and producers are figuring out how to create a drive-in experience. Backyard Beginnings. The first patented U.S. drive-in was created by Richard Hollingshead as a way to provide his mother, who was too large to sit comfortably in a movie theater, with a way to watch films. He experimented with hanging a sheet up between trees and putting a projector in the hood of a car in his driveway before opening a drive-in in Camden, New Jersey in 1933. Admission was 25 cents a carload. By 1942, there were around 100 drive-ins in the country, and after World War II, the concept really took off. Couples moved to the suburbs, purchased cars, and had babies, all of which added to the appeal of watching a movie from autos. At indoor movie theaters, people felt more compelled to dress up, but at the drive-in, you could leave your girdle at home, toss the kids in the back seat, and enjoy a cozy family night out, says Holman. The heyday was in the late 1950s when some 5,000 drive-ins existed, and seeing a movie in your car was a common family pastime, says April Wright, director of the 2013 drive-in documentary Going Attractions. Drive-ins were so popular that in August 1952 their attendance exceeded that of indoor theaters. As the years went on, cars became smaller, color televisions and VHS became mainstream, and acres of land that once belonged to drive-ins were purchased for urban development. John Vincent, Jr., president of the United Drive-In Theater Owners Association and owner of the Wellfleet Drive-In Theater in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, says 1987 had the worst attendance in his drive-in's history. That all turned around in 1993 when Jurassic Park, a supersized adventure that was just begging to be seen on a supersized screen, hit the drive-in. It was uphill attendance-wise from there, and it's been fairly steady since, Vincent says. There was a return to more family-friendly movies and superhero flicks, a change from the beach and biker movies of the 1960s and the raunchy R or X-rated films of the 70s, with Disney movies often dominating the box office. Another thing that's helped is nostalgia, people wanting to re-experience their past and the desire to introduce younger generations to the drive-in experience. Parents want to show their kids how fun it is to watch a movie outdoors, says Thomas Novak, owner of the Skyview Drive-In in Warren, Minnesota. Rubens and Newton John are thrilled that one of their childhood experiences is having a revival. It was such fun, Newton John says, watching a film out under the stars. Well, science fiction was often among the features that I recall going to a drive-in. Monsters, villainous robots, genetically altered animals. Well, you know the list. Even things from outer space, and that takes us to Colorado's UFO Watchtower, home to an alien mindset. David Ramsey's the writer. His article first appeared in the Colorado Springs Gazette and was republished in the August 21st, 2020 issue of the News and Observer. You will not meet aliens when you visit the UFO Watchtower. By the way, our dateline is Hooper, Colorado. You almost certainly will meet Americans who believe in aliens. These alien-believing Americans will show you video and tell stories gently, I hope, seek to persuade you aliens are genuine, and walk among us from time to time. You will not arrive at a different world at the UFO Watchtower. You will arrive at a different mindset. Somewhere along the dirt road that separates the watchtower from Colorado Route 17, the normal world of UFO skepticism vanishes, and a vivid if goofy world of belief emerges. Driving to Great Sand Dunes National Park, the watchtower, only 35 miles west of the dunes, is a fun side trip. For years, I drove past the exit for the watchtower, but a visit with Sarah Scholes, a Denver author, inspired me to take this detour to Zany Fun. Scholes wrote, "They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers," a book that examines what she sees as a New Age faith in the existence of aliens. Scholes is not a believer in UFOs, but enjoys talking with believers. Want to expand your horizons? Want to escape your sometimes tedious existence? Try listening, Scholes says. For me, it's exciting to see the excitement of other people, she says. I'm interested in what makes other people tick, and if that's UFOs, that's cool with me. If people know you're being dismissive, they won't tell you all kinds of things because they know you don't agree with them, so you just will know the thoughts of those who agree with you. I would rather know what people think, even if I don't agree with them. Scholes spent months respectfully listening to Americans tell UFO tales. The result was a meaningful book about a hidden sliver of America. I arrived at the Watchtower with determination to follow Sarah's advice. I was not a believer, and I knew I would not become a believer, but I would politely listen to believers. The Watchtower was created by Judy Messaline, who failed in her attempt to raise cattle in this especially inhospitable to cattle slice of the San Luis Valley. Instead, she opened a campsite and modest viewing platform in 2000. She created an intriguing slice of roadside Americana that you can visit for $2 a person or $5 a carload. The setting is gorgeous. The scenic route from Colorado Springs to the Watchtower goes through Salida, and the straight road along Route 285 and 17 hugs the mountains while delivering spectacular views. It's an easy, gorgeous ride. Judy says two vortexes exist at the Watchtower. Many believe vortexes exist at sacred sites on our globe, the Great Pyramid in Egypt, Tikal in Guatemala, Stonehenge in England, and, well, the Watchtower. Leaving an object on the Watchtower grounds, Judy says, entitles you to two requests. She says the success rate of those requests is quite high. Hundreds of objects are scattered on the grounds, pens, watches, glasses, stuffed animals, hubcaps, pennies. Statues of aliens overlook the collection. For some reason, I declined to make a request during my visit, but a request was not my purpose. I wanted to meet a believer in aliens. I wanted to talk with someone who sees visitors from different planets in our night skies. And I did. A woman named Cynthia wanted to show me and everyone else at the Watchtower footage on her phone that proved the existence of alien spacecraft, or at least proved the existence to her. I leaned close to her phone and watched blurry images of light approaching on the night horizon. The images were obviously, in my view, of everyday see-them-once-an-hour jet aircraft. But remembering Sarah's advice, I said nothing. "Aliens move among us," Cynthia said in a soft, slurred voice. A German couple listened intently as they looked at her phone. Judy leaned over for a quick look. Meanwhile, I gazed at open skies on a brilliantly bright night. Nothing strange was approaching. You know, we read earlier the Parade magazine article about the comeback of drive-in theaters, and that brought back a travel memory. It happened many years ago on a road trip I took from North Carolina to Kansas to visit some relatives. And I was on the final leg of this two-day drive and came upon a line of cars, and I checked the map and I should be just less than an hour from my destination. It was late afternoon, so I figured I'd hit some homeward-bound commuter traffic. Well, it was ever so slow but busy. Finally, the cars began to turn, so I thought, well, maybe there's a detour, because I had encountered some stretches of road construction along the way. Well, my two passengers and I were tired, and so we were eager to get going, so we were waiting to make our turn, and we inched along to where the cars were making that turn, and all of a sudden, we come to a booth. I had somehow managed to get off the highway and onto the entrance to a drive-in theater. I'll leave it to your imagination as to what the passengers had to say about my driving habits then. Well, thankfully, some patient and courteous drivers already in line appreciated my plight. They helped me to turn around and gave me directions to get back on the highway and on to my destination. So there you go. I linked the drive-in and the alien stories together. You couldn't believe that possible, huh? Only here on Armchair Traveling. We've run out of time for today's episode. Hope you've enjoyed it. You'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Travel is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.